Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the University of Iowa School of Social Work, offering the opportunity to earn a master's degree from anywhere in Iowa, including an all-online MSW program. Information at socialwork.uiowa.edu.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Most students in Iowa will not be in the classroom full time, at least for the start of the school year. If COVID rates continue to climb, so will the rates of remote learning. It's not going to be an easy or normal school year. But this is not the first time students have had to overcome obstacles. Kitty Weston-Nauer lives in Des Moines. She's a retired school principal. She worked for 33 years for the Des Moines Public Schools. She is also a BMX bike racer. And she grew up in South Carolina. She was the only Black student in her high school pursuing college prep courses. And life was not easy for her as a student back then. Miss Kitty, welcome back to the show.
Good morning, Charity, and thank you so much.
Well, thank you so much. And I do want to start with your personal history, because things are hard and bad right now for students everywhere. This is going to be a tough year. But I think we can learn something from some of the challenges that you overcame back in South Carolina. As I said, you were the only Black student in your college prep courses in high school. What was that like?
Right. There was a college prep math course in particular. No, there were no other students of color. In my graduating class, first of all, understand there were only four African-American students in that entire 300 and some of us class. The indignities that we faced every day of the week, the name calling, the threats. And one of the interesting things is I have the physical evidence in terms of one of the issues that I had to deal with, and that was having left a notebook in my college prep math course. When I came back the next day, images of the KKK, burning crosses drawn on the front and back cover. And of course, would have been a representation of me kneeling at the feet of KKK.
You had just left your notebook in the class on accident. You come back to this the next day. Just hateful, hateful images. How did you react?
Yes. Of course, my first was, why me? Why would they do this to me? I mean, I knew the kids. It was a very small class. I don't think there were more than, 17, 18 of us in the class. And we were already into October, so we had been there since August, okay? And why they would do this to me, I had not done anything to them. But understanding the times, we're talking about 1965. And that is just the lay of the land in the South at that time. Know that people of color were still being denigrated for whatever the reason might have been. I showed it to my father, and so he asked me, well, what are you going to do? And I said, well, of course, you're going to get me another notebook. Mind you, the notebook was only 50 cents. And my father said to me, Kitty, I don't have another 50 cents. I understand why. I had a brother who was at Temple University freshman year, and there were still five of us siblings at home. I was on my way to graduating from high school and moving on to college. So I understood this. So what did I do? Well, my father always said, always move forward. That was another learning experience for me. I carried that notebook with me for the remainder of the school year because I needed to have that notebook to put my notes in from that class. Now, classroom teacher didn't like it. Students looked at me like, you got to be kidding me. Now, I'm telling you, those students in that class never did anything else to me or said anything else to me. And, of course, the principal wanted to know when I was going to get a new notebook, and I explained to the principal plain and clear, I didn't draw this on here. Someone in that classroom drew this on here. I didn't do it to myself. I'm going to continue to carry this notebook, and I did.
And you have kept the covers
yep.
of that notebook
yep.
with you, and you even travel with them. You've shared them with so many students over the years. Why are they so important to you?
You know what? It is important to understand that there are always going to be challenges in your life. You talk about the challenges that our youth have for today. You're going to, and this is being spread throughout the universe, the challenges that our youth are having. Okay, with the COVID. But once again, there are going to be these challenges that only you are going to have to face. And in light of that, what are you going to do? What do you have within yourself to say, you know what, this is something that I can overcome. This is a learning experience, and I will be able to take this learning experience and move forward in my life with it. And that's what I've been able to do.
I want to make clear that we're not saying, you know, that things aren't challenging right now or that students should just get over it. And no one wants to go back to what was just a terrible situation for you and your fellow students in 1965. But what kind of perspective do you feel like we can offer our students? Maybe a lot of parents are listening right now. What can we say to our students to help them realize that they can get something out of this year and it's up to them to do it?
And this is the thing. Because know that there will there is light at the end of the tunnel, and that light is called a vaccine. And so until that comes about, and until we can all be inoculated, then what parents need to do is to continually have these conversations with their child. Now, I will tell you right now, parents are going to have to become they're going to have to be fortified within themselves to help their children understand this. And what are some things that they can do within their home? Yes, I know parents have to work. I get that. And every parent cannot work from home. And every parent cannot be a teacher. But we are going to have to figure out ways. So within our community, are there other folks that we can rely on? And I'm not saying going out into their homes, but I tell you what we do in this neighborhood we live in. Our conversations are out there in the street. The kids are out in the street. They're engaging in activities, but they're social distancing. We have to do that. Some of the other things we might want to look at is with today's technology, are we able to communicate FaceTime with one another or even Skype? Or in some instances, do we have access to Zoom? Now, within marginalized homes, some homes of color, that may not be something that can be done. Do you have a faith community that you can rely on for support? Because that's going to be the piece. And the other key is going to be mental health. When you see an issue, and please, I know in our metro area here in Des Moines, there you will have access mental health support. And I say reach out to the school and ask your schools, where shall I turn? Or your doctor, your family physician, where can we turn? Because we have within our own home access that support for our 39-year-old nonverbal autistic son. So, you know, we will have to rely on one another. I get it.
Yeah, Kitty, we talked earlier in the year, and I know that even though you're retired, you're the least retired person I know, but you have been helping out students. In fact, you taught some virtual summer school this year. And we also know so many things about this pandemic have revealed the inequities in our society in really jarring ways. And we know that not all kids have the same kind of access to education. That's pandemic right. Has deepened that. So as we enter this school year, what are you most worried about the students that might be left behind?
My concern is that every student, broadband needs to be made available in the state of Iowa from river to river so that every student would have access to it. That's number one. Number two, there are funds that are made available within that CARES Act that goes to schools, and some of that can be used for technology. So we have broadband, and we also have technology that schools will make available to families. We do know that some of that did happen. And that's why, and I want to correct you, I worked with two other colleagues that we put together virtual summer school. I did do 10 weeks of virtual teaching myself. I did not teach the virtual summer school. I really helped to just put it together and make sure it ran. But even within that 10 weeks of my virtual teaching of a family, that family did receive computers for the kids from their individual schools. And so parents are going to have to, and grandparents and great-grandparents, oh, by the way, they should also be providing for our pre-K kids, that is, through the schools. So have that conversation with someone in your school about, will you make this available for me? The other thing I know that was done in Des Moines is that they use funds to provide hotspots for families. So now that those families will have access. So we know that this can be done. And we know this because when we did our virtual summer school, there were parents who had access to hotspots. We've got to really think beyond and outside the box. And yes, parents, it is going to be on you to take a greater initiative. And this is not easy.
No,
I get that. I get that.
I you're talking about the Des Moines district. I live in Iowa City, another big district. And these are districts with a lot of resources. They're also districts with a lot of lower income students. And they've been working really hard to make sure that these populations can get connected. I worry a lot about our rural districts. What do you think about our rural districts? Because there are kids that really have a hard time connecting with technology there and districts without as many resources.
Okay, and this is where it is upon the state to let go of the funding that has come to the state of Iowa to make available to those communities. That's why I said broadband from one end of the state to the other, but also access to the technology. And our superintendents, the superintendents of those districts, need to have this conversation, go to our governor and say, please look, please listen, please see, and work with us so that, and this is what bothers me even more, is the smaller communities. They are in worse shape than a large district like Des Moines with a large marginalized group of students to work with. So those superintendents, parents in those communities, you need to have that conversation. Go to the governor and say point blank, how are you going to help us to help ourselves? We have to have this. That has to be done. And this is something the governor should automatically be doing. Releasing those funds, making sure those funds are in those smaller communities and smaller school districts so that they have access to broadband.
As I mentioned, and we just have about 3 minutes left, this pandemic and this summer's movement for social justice, both of these experiences have revealed to us a lot about the cracks in our support system and lack of supports for people of color in our society and in our schools.
Right.
If we get a vaccine, if we move past this pandemic, what do you think the most important thing that we can carry forward with us is?
One of the things we need to look at is when we talk about justice. Justice is for everyone in the state, not just for those of us who are economically able to enjoy the fruits of freedom. It is for everyone that must be done. And we must make sure the least of us still has what it will take within our lives to be able to live a life that would one would even consider normal, whatever normal is, because these are not normal times. And we've got to do that, knowing that all of us come to this earth and knowing that we want to be able to live a life that says, I am somebody, and I am deserving as the next person. It's going to be interesting.
Yeah. You have continued to make your athletic pursuits a priority during this pandemic. I know you've been racing during this BMX bike season. Do you feel like you're able to keep yourself safe doing that?
Definitely. And I tell you, a lot of our races have been recanceled and rescheduled and moved to spots where the COVID is not an issue. And so to that end, the other thing is that instead of my gathering with in groups, I will tend to go race and then I go back to my RV. That's not what I always have done in the past. We've always been extremely social, but we know, oh, by the way, yes, I do wear a mask when I am out and about. My son does travel with me. Same thing, wears a mask, social distancing. It works because we've been back to racing since the middle of June. And we are very careful. And everyone who is racing also is very careful because we want to be able to continue to race. So, yes.
Well, Miss Kitty, please be safe out there. And how's it going? Have you had a good season?
I have. I cannot complain. Looking at my national standings right now, I am still sitting in fifth place. My age group is 56 and over women. Cruisers, I am 72. I want to be able to finish in the top 10 for the season. There are a couple more nationals that I'm going to participate in before the season is over with. I can't complain about that. In terms of Gold Cup, I'm sitting in second place in North Central and second place in South Central in the United States in my age class.
Well, best of luck to you. Please be safe, and thank you for talking with me again today.
You are welcome. Thank you for inviting me, Charity. I appreciate it.
Kitty Weston-Nauer lives in Des Moines. She's a retired school principal and worked for 33 years in the Des Moines Public Schools. She is also a BMX bike racer, the oldest BMX bike racer in the United States at age 72. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the University of Iowa School of Social Work, offering the opportunity to earn a master's degree from anywhere in Iowa, including an all-online MSW program. Information at socialwork.uiowa.edu.